Today, Hong Kongers, please stay here. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, welcome to this post covering finance and property news and a few other things too. And today I'm joined again by Salvatore Babonis. Hello.
Hi Martin, thanks for having me back on the show.
No, great to have you back. And of course you are now the very person we must be talking to about China and Hong Kong, because that really is your speciality, isn't it? And of course the announcements are coming thick and fast. People around the world are throwing offers to people in Hong Kong, and people who are already out from Hong Kong, for example, in Australia, now have a way to stay here.
Well, China and Hong Kong and students, let's not forget, the offer from Scott Morrison that anyone here from Hong Kong can stay is especially targeted at Hong Kong students. There are about 10,500 of them currently in Australia. There are also some 1,500 people here on temporary work visas. They're going to offer them permanent residency and presumably an ultimate path to citizenship, since everyone on permanent residence is an ultimate path to citizenship. And of course, this is reminiscent of Bob Hawke's 1989 offer to the Tiananmen refugees, all Chinese students. There were about 42,000 of them in 1989 who were here in Australia, were offered the opportunity to stay, and most seem to have taken Australia up on the offer.
Of course, the environment is quite different now vis-a-vis Australia and China compared with then. And, you know, we're in a rather febrile environment already, so you'd expect to see some sort of reaction from China, wouldn't you?
We do expect a reaction from China, I think, any minute now. But the environment, the difference is not so great as you would think. Of course, the larger geopolitical situation is very different and has evolved enormously. But in both cases, in a way, it's almost a grab for talent. I mean, I don't mean to be so dismissive of a grand humanitarian gesture, but it's clear that this is to replace some of the lost skills migration that we have been missing this year. The offer is for people who are expected to be highly skilled. Let's face it, they don't face persecution upon return to Hong Kong. Of course, in the long run, they face the diminution of their liberties. But then again, everyone in Hong Kong, in the long run, is subject to the diminution of their liberties. So there doesn't seem to be anything special about this group of 12,000 or so Hong Kongers, except the fact they happen to be here. And that is actually a replay of 1989. I've actually been quite involved with some of the veterans of 1989. Who have stayed, who've stayed involved in the democracy movement. And they're actually upset that Australia offered these visas to 42,000 people, and yet only a handful actually were involved in the democracy movement. And when I say a handful, I mean you can count them on two hands, maybe two hands full are actually involved in the China democracy movement. The rest just happened to be in Australia studying English. They weren't politically engaged. They weren't looking for asylum, but offered it, of course, they grabbed it. You know, the opportunity to leave a extremely poor, you know, highly repressive state like 1989 China and relocate to Australia was a dream come true. They, and I've heard it said many times by Chinese Australians, new Chinese Australians, they won the lottery. In some sense, these 12,000 Hong Kongers who are currently in Australia have also won the lottery in that they now have the opportunity for permanent residence that otherwise they would have had to put in a lot of effort, a lot of money to get out. I don't begrudge it to them at all. And actually, I'm supportive of this move. But I also think we need to have a sense of perspective on it. It's not really about persecution. If I were to bet, I would bet that most of the 12,000 who are here in Australia at some point when travel restrictions are lifted will return to Hong Kong. Now, that doesn't mean that they won't accept permanent residence. It's offered it. Well, why not add it to your list of passports, list of places you can live? But I don't think there's any reason to expect that these 12,000 in particular are especially subject to political persecution in Hong Kong, any more than the 14,000 who were here in 1989 were likely to face persecution when they went home.
So your sense then is it's more about bolstering local migration and capability than it is actually deliberately making a political gesture towards China from Morrison's perspective.
Well, let's say it's not a gesture towards the Hong Kong students, but it may be a gesture at China. Of course, the Morrison government is very well aware that China will be furious and will react furiously to this. The implication that Hong Kongers need refuge. Of course, they might be more furious if Australia were to actually offer refuge to those in Hong Kong who've been involved in protests. They're the people who really need the protection. But of course, they're not necessarily likely to have the same kind of skills base as the students and skilled migrants who are already here in Australia. Now, I'm not saying Australia will not offer asylum to those people. Australia might very well do so in the future. And, you know, this is a generous first gesture, but it's also a gesture calculated to upset China. You know, China has been pushing the envelope with its aggressive actions towards Australia, whether that's the tariffs on beef and barley, or the tariffs on barley, the prohibition of Australian beef, the very aggressive statements about Australia being a racist country, warning its own citizens not to travel Australia because of supposed racism in Australia. And in return, we've now seen Australia warning its citizens not to travel to Hong Kong and offering what is, you know, to all intents and purposes, an asylum to Hong Kongers in Australia. So this is you're just raising the stakes one notch higher in the diplomatic spat between Australia and China.
And I noticed today, reading some of the international wires, that in fact China has sort of flagged that they might be importing more iron ore from African countries rather than Australia ahead as well.
That might be true, but I always remind people that commodities like iron are essentially fungible, which means that if China buys more iron from Africa, that just means African iron that was going to European steel mills will now not be going there, and Australian iron will go there instead. The really important thing to watch is the iron futures price, not which ships are going to which countries. But there are broader implications for Hong Kong. And if you want to talk about the global impact on Hong Kong, Hong Kongers now have the chance to go everywhere. I mean, I said that iron is fungible. I wouldn't ordinarily say that people are fungible, yet it almost seems that way because Hong Kongers have the offer to go all around the world. People don't realize it. Probably more than half the population of Hong Kong already has been given the opportunity to migrate to the United Kingdom. We keep hearing the statistics about the British national overseas, the BNO passport holders. The BNO passport, although it looks like a passport, is not a passport at all. I mean, it doesn't give you, or it's not a citizenship document, I say. It is merely a passport. It gives you the opportunity to enter a country. Historically, it has not given Hong Kongers any particular rights in the UK except the right to enter without applying for a visa. Yeah, but they weren't allowed to work in the UK. They weren't allowed to stay in the UK. Now, Boris Johnson and the Conservative government in the UK has offered those BNO passport holders something like, I've seen estimates from 2.9 to 3.1 million people who are eligible for the BNO passport. They don't necessarily have them right now, but pretty much everyone who was already a British subject in Hong Kong in 1997 is eligible for this BNO passport. Now, here's the kicker. Their dependents are also eligible for migration to England. They're not eligible for BNO passports, but they're eligible to migrate along with people who do have them. Now, the BNO passports cover potentially everyone who was a British subject in 1997. That's pretty much everyone over the age, all local people over the age of 23 in Hong Kong. Well, their dependents cover pretty much everyone under the age of 18 in Hong Kong. So there's a kind of Hong Kong gap of people aged something like 18 to 23 who sadly don't have the opportunity to go to the United Kingdom. And maybe that's the group who will come to Australia. Of course, those are the current Hong Kong students. And if I can go on and on, it's not just Britain. Taiwan has set up an entire government office dedicated to recruiting Hong Kongers. I mean, I'm sorry, they don't use the word recruiting. They use the word helping or accommodating, but let's face it, it's recruiting. Taiwan wants to take advantage of Hong Kong's talent pool to move industries to Taiwan. Japan has announced a visa program and a business relocation program specific to the finance industry. So they're trying to take away Hong Kong's financial center status and relocate all of that to Tokyo. The United States has a bill going through Congress. It's not yet got through Congress, but it has very strong bipartisan support to offer visas to high-skilled people from Hong Kong. And we're not sure whether the skill test will end up in that bill or not. But you know, countries around the world are scrambling to get a piece of the Hong Kong action.
And again, I have to ask the question, do you think this is really just grabbing valuable assets and valuable capabilities to be able to bolster, you know, capabilities in those own countries? Or is it, again, part of this signaling and part of this posturing vis-a-vis China?
Well, obviously it's both. It's an easy poke in the eye to China, but it's also this attempt to get the skills. I mean, the whole world could also open up its visa programs to humanitarian refugees from China. The entire Uyghur population of Xinjiang theoretically should be eligible for protection visas, yet nobody has gone so far as to offer a blanket refugee program for Uyghurs. Similar arguments could be made for Tibetans. Or for that matter, anybody who is opposed to the Communist Party in China. You know, there might be 400 million people in China who theoretically would be eligible for refugee status. But we're not seeing that. You know, what we're seeing is specifically a grab for Hong Kongers. And that mirrors or at least replicates efforts that have been made to attract students from, you know, the most elite students from China and from Hong Kong. Canada, for example, bases its immigration program primarily around student immigration. So while Australia has a big controversy over, you know, should Australia be granting residence to students who come to Australia for their university educations, in Canada, it's an explicit immigration pathway. You do your degree and you get on a ladder that ultimately leads you towards citizenship in Canada, and that's mainly targeted at people from China. So I would see this, you know, scramble for Hong Kong talent as really an extension of this, you know, scramble for the students that has been going on for years. Why Hong Kong, right? There are lots of people in the world who suffer serious repression. Well, Hong Kong, because those are people who are suffering repression, but who have extraordinary high levels of knowledge, productivity, human capital, and often financial capital.
Mm. Right. So they're an attractive target in a way then. But surely, if you sort of stand back and think about, you know, UK effectively entered this agreement with China some time ago to transfer Hong Kong, you know, the one country, two systems sort of thing. But surely it was always going to be on the cards that at some point Hong Kong would end up China.
Right. Well, it was always going to be on the cards for 2050. We've all been debating how long it would take.
Yeah, but isn't that the point? I mean, this was always going to be, at some point, this was always going to be the point. It would always merge ultimately. And I guess the only question was how quickly it would be.
Well, the theory, and I never signed on to this theory. The theory was by the time it made that transition, China would have liberalized. Right? So the theory was that there was this very long transition period with the idea that China was liberalizing. And in 1997, you might have been forgiven for believing that China was ultimately going to liberalize. And if China was going to liberalize, then China would converge up to Hong Kong standards instead of Hong Kong being wrenched down to China standards of governance. Now, of course, that hasn't occurred. There has been retrenchment in China, a reversal of reform. And as a result, we are seeing Hong Kong come under severe pressure. I think the big question in everyone's mind in Asia is not so much surprise this is happening in Hong Kong. Everyone, like you said, everyone knew it was in the cards. But what does it mean for Taiwan? And that's the big question, that, you know, the big unknown that we'll find out, you know, over the next decade.
Right. What's your guess on that?
I guessed 6 years ago in an article in the Georgetown Journal of Asian Affairs that Taiwan was the next Hong Kong. That is, Taiwan was a place that was inside China, but forever outside China as far as its legal jurisdiction ran. And I wrote 6 years ago that Hong Kong inevitably was going to be subsumed by China. China couldn't resist keeping its hands off the rule of law in Hong Kong. And, you know, Taiwan, Hong Kong is one of the densest air corridors in the world. I believe it's the densest, or was before coronavirus, the densest international air corridor. Melbourne, Sydney is slightly bigger as a domestic air corridor. There's enormous ties, both cultural and linguistic, between Taiwan and Hong Kong. In fact, both countries are primarily populated by refugees from mainland China. I mean, we forget Hong Kong's population something like quadrupled between 1949 and 1955 as people fled the Chinese regime. Well, the same thing happened in Taiwan. That is, much of the population in Taiwan, it's not quite the majority, but still much of the population in Taiwan is either, you know, people who fled China or the descendants of those who fled China. Now, when I wrote that in 2014, Taiwan was under KMT, Kuomintang administration. There was a much more of a live and let live attitude in cross-strait relations, and I could envisage Taiwan evolving into a kind of new Hong Kong. Now I'm not so sure, because under DPP administration, Democratic Progressive Party administration of Tsai Ing-wen, of course, there's been much more confrontation between Taiwan and China. So now it's almost inconceivable to imagine China granting financial licenses to Taiwan banks, you know, to make Taiwan a major offshore yuan center and, you know, a major center for China's financial system. That's become much less conceivable than it was even 6 years ago. That said, maybe in another 6 years, things flip around again. What I do think Taiwan will benefit from is the exodus of small and medium-sized enterprises from Hong Kong. I'm thinking of people in the, you know, architecture industry, you know, architecture, design, publishing, public relations, you know, all the sorts of support industries that surround a major financial center. You know, Hong Kong will remain a major financial center, if nothing else than because China insists that it remain one. But much of those other businesses that, you know, surround the sophisticated core of a major financial center may well move to Taipei. And I think Taipei will become much richer, both financially and culturally, as a result.
Well, it's certainly an area in flux and relationships in flux and et cetera, et cetera. But I guess, you know, we will at least have some people here in Australia who have been benefited from these new arrangements. And I guess we'll see how it plays out. Very interesting conversation.
Thank you. We will see.
Yeah, thanks.